There are many long hallways. How many, I don't know. Endless, it seems. I can't tell you how long they are. They're poorly lit to save energy. As I walk down a hall, a region of light follows me so that I clearly see everything within my own region of the hallway. The region of light extends to about 100 feet in front of me and behind me. Beyond this light, in both directions, the hallway fades into darkness. The region of light follows me, regardless of which way I walk. No doubt, there are sensors that relay my position to a computer that controls the lights for my convenience. The hallways are spotless, not a speck of dirt. The air is filtered and kept at optimal temperature and moisture. The equipment is so efficient that not a sound can be heard from it. At first, I thought that the hallways were completely silent. But then I thought, I'm not sure, I heard a faint hush and a deep rumble. If there really are such sounds, and I'm really not sure, I know that it's the sound of breathing, sighs, and heartbeats. You see, along each side of the hallway is a row of plastic capsules, and in each capsule is a human being. As I walk down the hallway, an endless procession of encapsulated humans passes by on both sides, almost as though they are floating past me rather than me walking past them. All this occurs in silence, except for my own sound and the possible hush of sighs and the rumble of beating hearts. Each human being sits silently in a capsule, no more than a foot from the next. Everybody is healthy. Everybody is in the prime of life. It appears that optimal nutrients and preventative medication are fed through inhalation. Some sort of electrical field stimulates the muscles to keep them in optimal condition. In some way, the aging process appears to have stopped. Disease appears to have been eliminated. The possibility for injury has been eliminated. As far as I can tell, death does not occur. All of this life support system is automatically controlled through sensors that relay information to computers that control feeding, exercise, and whatever else is needed to sustain optimal health. As far as I can see, perfect health is automatically available to everyone with no effort. The order and efficiency of this system are remarkable. But as I walk down the hallway in hushed and rumbled silence, it is the faces of the people that impress me. Everyone has a look of contentment, happiness, and fulfillment. Never have I seen such radiance on people's faces. At first, I feel exhilarated. I expect them to leap out of their capsules and hug me and dance, but they don't leap out. They stay in their capsules, turning their heads slightly as they nurture their smile, moving their bodies gently as expressions of their contentment, happiness, and fulfillment. I suddenly feel terribly alone. Their eyes always seem to look over my shoulder out into the empty space of the hallway. I'm walking faster now. An endless procession of contented, happy, and fulfilled looks flows out of the darkness in front of me, shoots past me on both sides, and then melts into the darkness behind. Let me explain the meaning of all this from the limited information that's available to me. Each person in a capsule has complete controls available at all times. Through such controls, individuals can bring about any image and emotional state they wish. I think that some sort of electrical field alters their brain waves, so virtually any experience can be placed in their minds. A computer controls this electrical field in response to the commands of each encapsulated person. Feelings of love, compassion, fulfillment, meaning, significance, contentment, belonging, optimism, and anything else are available on command. feelings of pain, suffering, resentment, despair, guilt, anxiety, loneliness, emptiness, and fear, they're also available on command. But it appears that no encapsulated person selects these. From the looks on the endless faces, everyone has a positive outlook. But the choice for these more negative feelings is always available. All sorts of experiences can be called forth from each person. If you wish to experience love, compassion, and fulfillment in a mountain cabin with a warm fire in the fireplace, then that experience is available to you on your command. All the feelings, sighs, smells, and sounds are placed in your brain. The people in the capsules don't imagine these things. They experience them. I later learned a little about the history of these hallways. In the past, sounds were available to people on command through radio. Then with television, picture and sound became available at the flip of a switch. Through sight and sound, one could experience adventure, travel, love, compassion, competition, and lots more. The number of television channels were expanded, and personal home computers were added to enable more individual control. But such controlled experience of sight and sound was not personal enough. The experience through sight and sound was too incomplete. Later, emotions themselves were broadcast with the pictures and sounds. At first, this was attempted through background music. Then various forms of subliminal suggestion were added. There were objections to the use of subliminal suggestion. However, these objections were overcome by allowing the individual viewer to select his or her own subliminal suggestions. Such individual control was made possible by interfacing the personal home computer with the television with its expanded channels and videotape storage. Viewers could add pre-programmed packets of subliminal suggestion to their viewing experience. Thus, experience through sight, sound, and feelings became more available for individual use. Later, more efficient ways of controlling emotional involvement were developed. Devices were developed to alter brainwave patterns so as to more directly control feelings. Feelings could be dialed and controlled along with pictures and sounds. It later became apparent that mere pictures on a small screen were too restrictive. With technological advancement, entire images, complete even with smells, could be transmitted to the brain. Total experience was the goal, and the technology to produce this was expanded. At first, total experience devices were a novelty, but their practical value soon became apparent. As an example, prior to the use of these devices, people traveled a great distance in order to have a wide range of experience. With total experience devices, the experience could be brought to the person rather than the other way around. This more efficient transfer mode of experience reduced travel substantially. Consequently, natural resource consumption and pollution declined. That was fortunate because both had reached near catastrophic levels. Additional efficiencies were quickly realized. The poor could experience wealth. The lonely could experience friendship and community. The guilty could experience forgiveness. Failures could experience success. Even the violent could experience violence without hurting anyone. Crime rates declined. The early techniques, of course, had some limitations. Early techniques took a person and placed him or her in an actual experience, say skiing or fishing. The brain waves of the person in the experience were recorded. These same brain waves could then be transmitted to any number of receivers, that is, other people, and they, in theory, could have the same experience. These early methods did not work too well because the original person who had the experience had too many other feelings and memories mixed up in the recorded experience. The people receiving the experience would thus get terribly confused. In time, however, computers were able to filter out these background experiences in a complex procedure called decontextualizing. Thus, the essence of the experience could be inserted into the receiver's mindset. At first, this still resulted in difficulties because the experience might not fit the receiver's mindset. This difficulty was overcome by a contextual conditioning procedure that adjusted the receiver's mindset to permit the experience reception. The next breakthrough was experience enhancement directly through computer synthesis. Eventually, the original experiencer was not needed. The computer could combine different experience patterns in response to the control of the receiver. Thus, the original experience was no longer limited by the actions of an actual person. The biomedical breakthrough came about and brought about the next revolution. Now, the users of total experience devices could be far more healthy and safe than non-users. In addition to becoming more experienced, users could remain youthful and beautiful through the maintenance system of the capsule. The objections of non-users declined, and eventually non-users died off. Through the use of robots, total experience devices were made available to everyone. Maintenance activities were taken over by robots, and this eventually led to the present system. Now, I must emphasize that the receivers, the people in the capsules, are totally in control. They can and they do adjust experiences to meet their own personal needs. Each receiver is totally free to control his or her own life without infringing upon someone else. There is total equality among all receivers. Yet at the same time, any or all receivers can experience arrogance and privilege if they decide to. In fact, any or all receivers could experience being a king, an emperor, or a czar without infringing upon the freedom and independence of any other receiver. There is no violence of one person on another. Crime and war are non-existent. Love can be experienced without pain if a receiver decides for such an experience. The receivers are in charge. They control their own lives through the individual controls within each capsule. Any receiver can leave the total experience capsule at any time. Provisions are maintained for those who might make that decision, though I am not aware of anyone who has. I don't know what the experiences the receivers are now having. You see, the experience synthesizer, the computer, was programmed to learn. Computers develop new patterns of experiences. They are made available to receivers. Based upon the choices that receivers actually make, ever newer and better patterns of experience are evolved. Thus, the entire system is progressive. It improves by responding to the expressed needs and decisions of everyone. I look into one capsule after another. Endless capsules, but no look comes back at me. I see endless faces, one after another, always smiling, sighing, and looking past me into the empty space of the hallway. I am a stranger in this world, and I am uncomfortable in it. The ecstatic faces, the smiles of pleasure, the sighs of contentment, all dart past me as I quicken my pace down the hallway. I now find myself walking faster. No, I'm running. At last I see something from within the darkness in front of me. It's a faint red light. I continue toward it, slowing down because of the shortness of my breath. The light grows brighter. I recognize it. I stop dead in my tracks. It's a simple exit sign, still beyond my region of light. I slowly walk toward it. Again, I notice the looks of contentment and fulfillment from the encapsulated persons. They're beautiful. so beautiful to miss even seeing a mere ordinary person like me. They still look over my shoulder into the empty space of the hallway. I stand in silence, breathing heavily. I try not to look at the endless rows of sighing, smiling bodies, but then something catches my eye. There to my left is an empty capsule, clean, open, and welcoming. An empty capsule surrounded by looks of happiness, contentment, and fulfillment. What experiences they might have. Certainly not the anxiety and emptiness that I feel. My imagination swims in fantasies. I could choose those experiences and more than I could ever imagine. I could be healthy and recover my youth. I could be in control. The empty capsule, clean and inviting, stands before me, and down through the darkness beyond my region of light is the exit sign. There's a question now. Should our character get into the capsule? Thank you. Should our character get into the capsule? Think about it. What do you think?
No.
It is real tempting.
Tempting,
it's
right?
Very tempting.
Yeah.
But I'll never get out.
Okay, so you sense in there something that says no. At the very least, you sense some hesitancy. And some of you, a definite no. Don't. A feeling for the character. Don't get in. Okay? Now be aware of that feeling. Now let's start asking the question, why? Why not get in?
It's kind of like you're selling your soul.
Kind of like you're selling your soul.
You play on, you're always in control, but as soon as you hook up to the machine, you're back lose control, it seems to me.
There's a paradox here. The more control you have, the less
you
get.
Have, that's right.
A paradox, aha.
It's almost like someone's on drugs or something. So these days, there's no control. They don't have control.
And yet the system gives you ultimate control, and yet it's no control.
There's no further chance of that person being anything more than what they are right now.
We'd have to examine what that means, because you know, in the capsule you can be whatever you want.
You can experience more, but you can't. But it would put an end to creativity.
We'd have to check on what we mean by creativity.
Yeah, but is that real?
They can is that real and authentic?
Whatever they want.
Is it real or authentic?
Their experiences are not
creative. No, all experiences are synthetic. They're being created for them.
How do we know it's synthetic?
What's the difference?
Yeah, well, there is no difference. If it's,
but they're all...
They don't know. There's no difference. I mean, all, it's synthetic or it's real.
But they all seem to be good experiences. I mean, there's no...
But you have the choice for bad ones if you want.
But do you? I mean,
yeah. You do.
Yeah.
Well, as I heard, it was the only interaction with anyone else was what the computer picked up was the thing that it should do the most people requested.
Whatever. You're in control. Whatever experience. You want to experience, you know, Holden Village, you can imagine what that is and dial it.
So, but you experience you only that. With the computer, it's no one else. Other than the fact that you are sharing some computers.
Well, what does that mean, though? If I want to experience a crowd, I can experience a crowd. If I want to experience another person, I can experience another person. If I want to experience a community, we're back to that authenticity. But is it really an authentic person that's there?
You can touch the other person.
Yeah.
If I want to experience the touch, I can experience the touch.
It's just all it is. It's just the computer at the end. It excites the nerve endings as if you're touching. It's just
that's
the
right.
Same.
So there's this comment here, the element of risk is gone. But I guess if we wanted the computer to give us some risks.
Now you're safe. In the capsule, you know you're safe.
Okay.
So the real risk is gone.
Okay. So there's something in risk or vulnerability. But that comes back to if you've got too much control and you have no control.
Can they also get out of the capsule?
Yeah, they can go anytime they want.
Cold plug.
Well, probably just also to a purpose is something that the person's not doing something that's, you want to put it, doing something constructive.
We have to watch out what we mean by that, though. It's, well, here I can form any world I want. That's creative. There's something inauthentic about that.
Okay. Well, what's everybody done who's not in the capsule? I mean, is everybody in the capsule?
I don't know.
Because if everybody's in the capsule, then nothing's happening.
I don't know. We can't extend this.
Come to an end real quick.
We can't extend the story. We'll stick with that. You know, there's ways of changing the story to make the question easier.
Seems to me.
It would be like you put in your life at standstill. You decided my life is going to just stand still for a moment, and I'm going to go into here, and you know, nothing is going to progress.
Your system.
What about even making yourself a sense of vacation? If you do this for a week, you get in one of these box capsules for a week and have a vacation, all those experiences. Is that how? Then you say, okay, I'll get out and we'll do something.
It would be desirable if you knew it was temporary.
Well, you can get out anytime you want. There's something seductive, though, about all that control.
You would have no desire.
You might not have any desire to get out. This choice would be yours.
In other words, if you get out, you choose mortality.
You choose
aging and pain and real anxiety and so on.
Okay. Now, there's something to watch, though, when people are explaining. Because, you know, we can take almost anything we've said, and we can say, well, the synthesizer could do this. You want to experience creativity? Okay, synthesizer can do this. But also notice several things when you're trying to explain why you wouldn't get in. Be in touch with that. There's a lot of people that use some body language. You were using some body language. And we were fumbling around for words. Did you find out, you know, I want you to be aware. Like, well, you know, there was some stammering, okay? It's not real or authentic, okay? And what I like to suggest to you in here is that any reasons that we give for not entering the capsule, you know, they all come across as understatements. That's not quite what I meant to say, you know. The risk, for example. Well, that's not quite what I meant, because we could program some sort of risk, you know, some random risk into the computer. I want to meet other people. The experience of that, but that's not quite. I want to meet real people. What does real people mean? Well, it's sort of, you know, they're really, you know, you find yourself talking this way. Okay? So what we can say so far is there is something in the human experience that we can't quite define that causes us to reject a world of control, peace, health, and all these things that we say we're working for. Okay? There is something inauthentic, we can't quite put our hand on it, and it puts such a call upon us that we would reject this world of pure delight, peace, no conflict, anything you want, control, all the rest of that. And there's something that we say, wait a minute, involves vulnerability, anxiety, pain, mortality, but we're still called by it. Kind of a crazy thing. Okay, does that fit your experience? Okay, and that's the experience we want to get at, not the explanation. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to continue the story. Okay. So far, this is my writing here, I've assumed that you would not enter the capsule, or at least you would hesitate. Okay. I have assumed that the character of our story refuses to enter the capsule. because something essential to being human would be lost. Okay? But now let's consider the other possibility. Let's consider the choice to enter the capsule. A choice that, you know, we might have some reason to make. And let's just see what that choice involves. Imagine the character of our story standing in front of the empty capsule. On both sides we see smiling faces. Okay? Technology no longer serves wars, it no longer pollutes the environment, it no longer devours the Earth's resources. Technology serves the innermost needs of humans. The machines and devices are not out of control. There are no technological monsters. There's no organizations or elites that are forcing anything on anybody. Each individual is free to choose based upon his or own personal inner feelings, passions, needs, and desires. Okay, that's what we see. But now let's see if our character chooses that. If our character chooses to enter, what choice has really been made? Oh, the choice to experience safety, health, peace, fulfillment, whatever else. Yeah, okay. But what else is involved in the choice? The choice to enter the capsule involves giving something up. There is a grave risk of losing something, but what can this something be? Now, we've answered with such words as authenticity might be lost, or the real might be lost. But such words sound vague and incomplete. Now, can our story help us to better understand what we risk losing? Okay, let's look back on this amazing technological system. Okay? And let's think of it in a technological way. Let's imagine and see what happens to this system. Because remember, I said it was a learning system. We had robots that could change it to meet whatever needs the people in the capsules wanted. Okay? Now let's start thinking, and I'll think more as a technologist now. And I'll say, how can the capsule system be improved? How can we make it better? Now, as an engineer, I've worked with computers, and it appears to me that eventually the weak part of this entire system would be the carbon-based receivers, that is, the human brains and bodies attached in the capsules. That's the weak part of the system. It appears to me that the efficiency and performance of these receivers could be improved by transforming them to silicone-based receivers, that is, transforming them to computers. Receptivity to experience could be enhanced. The variety of experience could be expanded. Maintenance and repair would be far easier. Now, certainly the existing computers of this system, which are themselves silicone-based, they'd be able to determine these advantages. And the robots could provide the services. The question is, would the carbon-based receivers, that is the people in the capsules, would they choose to make such a transfer? I believe they would. After all, the transfer would be gradual, and each step of the transfer would involve tremendous subjective advances. Expanded experiences, new dimensions of feelings, and greater security. Those system modifications, not accepted by the carbon-based receivers, the people, would of course be rejected. Our system forces nothing on anyone. It only serves people's needs. But then some options would likely be selected, and with time, the cumulative result of such choices would most likely lead to more effective silicone-based receivers. The consequence of such choice would be a computerized receiver system. Eventually, of course, the total experience system and the receiver system would become totally integrated. Human beings will have chosen themselves out of existence. All that is left, what is left, what has been remains, all that is left are the devices of our own control. We are gone. We as humans are gone, but the instruments of our use remain. The products, instruments, and devices are efficient. They're orderly, they're precise, and they're controlled. They will continue to serve long after humans have chosen themselves out of existence. But what will they serve? Okay? They serve technology. Control in the service of control. order in the service of order, efficiency in the service of efficiency, use in the service of use, and power in the service of power. Okay? And what has been lost? Okay? Human being has been lost. Now, imagine that this outcome has actually occurred. That is, a completely integrated computer system is present. A series of flipping switches going on back and forth. That's what a computer is. I ask you, when did humans of our story choose non-being? When did they make that choice? Was it when the last human brain cells were replaced by computer components? It seems to me that the choice came earlier than this. But how much earlier? How far back in the history of our imaginary culture would we have to go in order to say, yes, here are real human beings making real choices? As we go back into the history of our imaginary culture, we come closer to our own culture. Let's go back in the history of our imaginary culture to when the complete carbon-based receivers, the biological humans, were still in the capsules. That's the age that the character described. Okay? Here we find biological organisms similar to ourselves, but have they already chosen non-being? It seems to me they have. And it's only a matter of technological refinement before the biological organisms themselves are replaced. At this time, they are so much contained in their essential choice that the outcome of their non-being only needs to be worked out. It seems to me that the essential choice for our imaginary culture preceded the historical period of our story. There is good reason to believe that we must go earlier into their history. That is, we must come closer to our own culture to find out when the choice for non-being was essentially begun. But how close dare we come? Could it be that we have already made the choice? Okay? We may not end up with the same world as our imaginary culture. After all, history works itself out in surprising ways. Technology provides many options for humans to choose non-being. That is, there are varieties of non-being open to us. But if we trace the history of our imaginary culture back to when they made their essential choice, will we not likely find a culture essentially similar to ours? Our story leads us to questions. Have we already begun the choice of non-being? Is this essential choice already behind us? Have we lost the ability to even discuss the meaning of human being? Have we forgotten being itself through our historical choices? Okay. Our technological background makes it difficult to address such questions. Indeed, it's our technological background that brings forth the capsules of our story. Okay? I'd like you to consider the one following quote from Newsweek magazine, August 24th, 1981. Researchers report that the average family member now spends more than 7 hours a day tethered to the tube, and just 14 minutes a day conversing with others in the house. Other studies show that the cable subscribers watch more TV than do their neighbors without cable. Futurists who put these findings together envision a nation of self-imprisoned vidiots, passively dependent upon the cable for most human intercourse, insulated from any idea or experience, not safely prepackaged for home consumption. Okay? Sounds like the capsule. But we better not just blame technology. I'd like to read a quote from a student, engineering student, studied this story. "I wouldn't enter the capsule. But if you ask me for a reason for not entering, I can't find the words. Any reasons that I give tend to sound religious, and I don't like that. You see, when someone comes up to me and talks about religion, I feel like they're asking me to get into their capsule. What can I say? Okay? Okay, now what are we to make of all this now? Let's go back and think just for a moment about when we said, no, I won't go into the capsule, or hesitated. Think no. We talked about something that we couldn't quite put our words together on. All the words were understatements. We talked about something that's called us to not be jump in the capsule. And we were willing to risk, you know, ill health, pain, and give up the security of the capsule to respond to that call. Okay? Now, I suggest, you know, the student that I had that said, any words that I give tend to sound religious, was right. Because there, I think we have encountered the face of religion. We are called to be more than, you know, receivers, okay? We are called to be givers and participants in God's creation. And that involves pain, and that involves vulnerability, and that involves suffering, and that involves death. And we are called to do that. And even though peace and health and all those things are not bad, to select those and deny the call is something no. There's something in us that says no, not we shouldn't do that. And that something calls us to not get into the capsule. And when we forget that something, we forget that, then we are making the choice. For what? For non-being. Then we are choosing to simply not exist. And we can be replaced by our own instruments. Okay? Does that make sense to you? Does that fit your experience? Okay, now that's what I'm trying to get at the story. That these things that we say in religious language, the call and God's call to us, sometimes we just say the words, but sometimes it's hard to, you know, really feel it, and we have to learn to tell stories. Remember I said that, to feel it. And that's what I hope this story does to us. And so sometimes when you're experiencing pain, and you're experiencing frustration and anxiety, think back and say, well, I didn't get in the capsule. Maybe now I wish I did, but I chose not to because something special was there. And I made that choice. And it's not that I like the pain. It's not that I like the anxiety. But I know that I am called. I am called. Okay? I know that. And that's why I choose, even the pain and the anxiety. Okay? You get that? Okay, does that fit the experience? The experience. Okay, somebody want to add something?
Yeah. You know, one thing my wife explained to me that going way back to the Garden of Eden, as the beginning of man's relationship with God, that kept thinking, she said that in the Jewish tradition, you know, Adam eating the apple in the garden is not the bad thing that we Christians or we Lutherans think it is, being expelled from the garden, but it's actually, they look at it as a positive thing, it's that is where man asserted himself, and actually that's where he began his relationship with God.
That could be.
And
that could be.
What this is here is nothing more than a, instead of the guardian back here, the guardian is down.
Okay, that could be. That could be. I would say, I don't know the answer theologically. I would say, however, that if we really wanted to understand that, we would have to be more Jewish.
Yeah, I was hoping so.
And I think the Jewish community can provide so much for the Christian community, and because I think our Christian community comes out of a Western technological society, and so of course, the Garden of Eden is great, but I don't know the answer. That's a good thing to study, though. I think it would be a good thing if we could get a good old Hasidic rabbi, one who's been rejected by the system, so he's not dominated by it, that I think it would be wonderful to have him just tell the stories. Yeah. Other observations?
Yeah, that thing is pretty common in science fiction. It reminds me of that movie, Fahrenheit 451. Yeah. It's a situation real similar to that. Yeah. It was the basis of the story. It was the man's wife. And she, at this time in the future, you could take drugs and sort of disappear into a fog of euphoria for a day or two and then come out of it. And when she came out of it, she was totally lethargic and he couldn't get her interested in any things that were involved in his real life. And he rebelled against that. And it was the basis of the story.
There are a number of science fiction stories like this. There's one problem in some of them. I had the guy who wrote Ecotopia read this, and he said, well, he had had something similar to this of a culture that were in these capsules, and then they were destroyed by a tribe of barbarians. Well, that just ruins the story. You know, if someone else destroys the system, then you're not faced with a choice. I had other people say, oh, but the system really wouldn't work. That's beside the point. That's jumping back to a technological question. It's not facing the question, how am I responding? It's focusing in on the system, and does it work? And that's the most technological question you can get. So there are ways of avoiding the story. But there are some science fiction stories that basically carry this kind of theme across. But if the devices break down in the science fiction story, then that the reader of the story, or the viewer of the story, they're let off the hook. Okay, they don't have to make. See, if I said, "Well, the system breaks down," man, would you choose? Well, obviously, no, it doesn't work. But if you assume it does work, then it's scarier. Yeah.
No, I certainly wouldn't be a catch wizard, but I think that I tried to joke with say. At what point will I stop accepting stimulation?
Yeah, that's true.
When will I turn my cable TV off? How far would I go?
That's
right. How much I use the technology? And that question to me is not clear.
Okay, it's not clear in the story, and there's one thing about a story, you can't carry it too far. Okay, you take a story, you get an experience, something from that, then it's time to drop the story. You can't treat the story as though it's going to address everything in your life. And so right now, I think it would be a good idea to drop it. We've experienced the story. But this is a question, and I would say that it has to be a continuing question. How much is enough? And I think generally that's true with everything that we have. We have to ask that question. How much are we going to become dominated by the very gifts that we've been given? And then they cease to be gifts. We cease to be gifts.
So I think in the old days, the only things that we had entertainment like we did with kings. We had their entertainment. Now all of us are kings. At what point do you become sir? You're no longer you're a slave.
That's right.
As you say, 8 hours a day.
That's right.
Bad stuff. And are you able to?
Right.
I know that philosophical or religious question. I don't know the answer to it.
Well,
I think
the question certainly is religious. And of course, the Christian Gospels, Christ becomes the servant. See, I mean, if Christ comes on earth as a king, you know, we say Christ is king, but we say it in a rather abstract. The whole story is Christ as servant, Christ born in the stable, Christ dying, Christ washing the feet, and all, you know, and of this. And yet Christ was not powerless. It wasn't that Christ was a weakling. It's that there was a deliberate choice in there to serve, and accept the vulnerability. Now, I don't think there are any good answers for all of the questions you're raising, but I think it's important for us to struggle with those. And like I said today, we struggle with them as bunglers. And that's why grace is so essential to us. Rudy?
I didn't hear your whole presentation, but I couldn't help but think of a cartoon that I framed earlier this spring, and I think I mentioned it to you. But it was about the time the second draft of the bishop's letter was being prepared, and the administration was kind of horrified at what they might do or say in it. So the cartoon was something like this. It was a castle-like building high stone walls, a tower in the back, or missiles, and all the symbols of power. And administration is over the main gate, and outside of the gate are the shepherds, and they are vicious. The sheep are grazing and munching their grass and ignoring the appeals to come in for protection. Come in.
Yeah.
The time is short.
Yeah.
You have room for your barbecue.
Yeah. Okay, well, that becomes kind of a capsule. There are so many ways. The idea of becoming a capsule or becoming involved in a capsule, it happens in so many other ways. I go on later in a chapter, this is a manuscript I've written, where a stranger comes in, and the stranger really says paradox is important. We should learn to accept that life contains paradoxes. And the stranger ends up with a dialogue with me, and I say, well, paradoxes, why? And the stranger says, paradoxes are the cracks in the capsules of our own expectations. We have our own expectations, and we get paradoxes. Why did that happen? But this and this can't happen. And these are the cracks in the capsules that we build when we impose our own expectations. Okay. So the metaphor of a capsule you can use. You know, I can use.
So we all, to a certain extent, do move in these capsules,
innit? To a certain extent,
yeah,
we do move.
Yes.
That's right.
Just by accepting modern medicine,
yeah,
we are extending our lives, we're improving
right.
our health, we're doing a lot of things to put ourselves into
it. And yet, at the same time, we can't reject all that, because there is goodness in that. There is goodness in the doctor saving the child. There is goodness in this, okay? And there is goodness in working for peace. There is goodness in all of those things. All of those things.
Is it a plan? Is it accepting? How about the idea of God having a plan for each one, apart from a call, but a plan? Whereas if you encapsulate yourself, you're actually taking over your own destiny.
Well, I like to think of it more as a calling, because a plan makes God sound too much like an engineer, and I know what engineers do, and I don't want God to be that way. So, but the word spirit and the word wind, I understand, are the same. And if we are in a capsule, we can't experience the wind, the spirit, okay? And yet, so in a sense, that's a metaphor. I think what we need to do is we do need to treat medicine and technology as a gift. But we must always ask the question, you know, what are its limitations? And I am called to be more than that. That calling when we stood outside the capsule, when we thought we would risk losing that, we would reject all of that goodness because of the calling. So we basically say all of the goodness, and I mean really goodness of medicine and all of that, we would reject that to respond to God's call. Now, fortunately, you know, God doesn't ask us to give all of that up. Okay? I don't think so. However, when we get to the point where we're not willing to give any up, then we've built our capsule. Okay, so I don't want to make people hermits and rejecting everything technological age and maybe dying of a disease that some doctor could have taken care of. Don't do that. I want you around here. But by the same token, technology is a gift, not a capsule. And God calls you and I, and that call is essential. Okay?
Yeah. I'm just going to try something on. It's part of the paradox in that I strive to control my world, and yet ultimately, being a human being, I am not in control.
Hopefully. The capsule story would say, suppose you succeed. Okay? That you really control the whole world. Then everything you get is a product of what you want. If you really do control the world. So I think what we do is we struggle to control and to have some power in this world, but we also have to sacrifice that power sometimes. We also have to set it aside so we can receive something other than the manipulations of our own control, so we can be open to something other than what we control. That's called vulnerability. Okay, that's one name for being open to something other than what you control. It's called vulnerability. That's one of the words. And it involves a deliberate sacrifice of power You know, you listen to someone when you could just as soon tell them to shut up. I mean, that's a little simple example. Okay? Okay?
Is it more conscious example, though, if you take something, medical treatment or a bigger television? What kind of example? I'm thinking in terms of people who are under capsules now, essentially medical treatment. They're in a capsule, and they get out of the capsule, they die.
Yeah.
Is that the...
I would say more than that, than those people. In fact, some of those people grow enormously. I would say that probably, particularly for men, their jobs probably are more capsules than any medical device. I would say that, you know, I have to struggle far more with that, where my whole being becomes wrapped up in that job. And I need to poke some holes into that, okay? So I would say the person in the physical capsule, the person in the jail cell and so on, or in an iron lung, I guess they don't have those, but something equivalent to that. And that's a horrible place to be, but I think that person, some of those people may be more open to God's call than anyone. Maybe they've experienced such vulnerability that they've learned to live with it more. I would say the capsules, according to the story, the capsules are the things that, you know, that we really enjoy and that we get our big ego that we control of. Again, I don't want to say that they're bad. But when they become capsules, then we get cut off from God's call. And remember the story, you chose not to. Okay? So the call is real. You've experienced it. Not because someone told you that, but we experience it. It's there. Yeah.
One word cloud that came to me is by going in that capsule, that's kind of like saying to God, well, I want my own way, I want to do what pleases me. It's kind of like what Satan did, he wanted to be like God and so on.
That's right. That's right. Right. And then that's a choice for non-being. We choose ourselves out of existence by that. Our very nature. Our essential nature is to be the person who responds to God's call. Be the being who responds. Now, there may be other beings that do that. They have to work that out. But our essential being is to respond to God's call.
Are the occupants of the castle, are they prisoners? Can they still respond to God's call in the castle?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to restrict God in all this. They have the choice to leave, but according to the story, he hasn't seen anybody who has. Okay, now I suspect there might be a huge lightning bolt from heaven that might destroy the castle. Although, like I said before, our God usually doesn't work through big lightning bolts. I mean, like I said, any God could do that. Our God works through bunglers like us. That's why it's such a miracle that anything gets done.
Well, our God has given us choices.
And the call to become involved, the call to care, God's call to us, is continual. It occurs even when we're the biggest bungler. And that's what grace is. You're called by God.
But this capsule doesn't give the person a chance to bungle or to ever be uncomfortable, or at least they wouldn't probably.
Yeah. Now I guess that God will break through that too, but anyhow, the story involves our choice, not God's. Okay?
Yeah. I haven't heard you say this, so I guess I want to get the response. I don't believe that it's possible for us to be in control, totally in control.
Well, I hope that's right.
I mean, because...
That sounds like a crazy thing for an engineer to say, but...
Because even part of your story, when we are in total control, we sacrifice our control to get there.
And I guess what that would be, if we're in total control and we're cut off from God's call, that is sin with a capital S, you know. Sin is separation from God. And if it is total, that is hell. Right? That would be, you know, you're cut off from God's call. Now, that may not fit most people's version of hell, but I don't... I don't think that we should belittle the force of evil that separates us from God's call. So, I hesitate saying, oh, it's not possible. Okay? Because, there is you know, there is an evil force that, you know, we can be separated.
I guess I'm saying, I don't believe, for me as a human being, it's possible for me to be in total control.
Okay.
And if I get to that place where I think I am, then I have given somebody else control.
Or you've ceased to be, in the story. So you've ceased to be. But we have a society that's very much committed to control. That's technology, control the world. Again, I don't say that's bad, it's when it becomes dominating. And we forget to ask control for what? We forget to ask that question. Then it becomes demonic, it becomes a capsule.
Well, as you suggested in many ways, in many aspects, many people suggest that a lot of our technologies have assumed control of us. I mean, we've polluted our water, we've polluted our air, we've rendered, you know, places uninhabitable and possibly could destroy them.
Those are signals.
Yeah.
Those are signals.
Clear signals that, you know.
They're not the problem, though. They're problems, but not the problem.
No,
because here's a world where they solve all those problems. Okay.
But they're symptoms of people's
pain. That's right. And they're messages.
One thing I've been thinking about is a theologian who teaches at Lutheran Northwestern who has made the statement in class, we are gods who defecate and we don't like it.
I'm afraid of that one.
Sounds very Lutheran.
Yeah, well, machines don't do that.
That's true. Machines are a lot cleaner. Well, some of them. Other, yes?
Yeah, I was just thinking back on one of the people in today's session quoted something Henry Nouwen said that about interruptions. My life work was always being interrupted until I found out my life work was not interrupted.
Oh, yes.
Well, the capsule.
That's it, yeah. I never thought of that. Yeah, my wife said that, yeah. You see, your work can be a capsule. And then these interruptions, these holes that keep getting poked in it. Okay, I think I'll end now because I'm losing my voice.